After the Echo Chamber that was the last episode, I've made some changes. I've put together a DIY recording box, because who wants to pay upwards of $200 when I can get the job done for $10? With that being said, this is my last podcast, as I will now be entering a DIY construction job. I was also told that you could hear one of my cats in the last episode, so I've let him know that it's time to pack his things and get out of here. Well, I suppose it's time to get this party started. This episode was certainly a challenge for myself. Although there is nothing I love to study more than American history, I must admit, I don't necessarily fancy war history. In fact, I avoid it at all cost. But that isn't fair to you all, my listeners. So this week, we are going all the way back to the Revolutionary War. While I won't be necessarily dissecting the war itself, I will be covering a key figure of it. A figure whose name is synonymous with treason. The one, the only, Benedict Arnold. Arnold's fall from heroic general to extreme traitor is still taught in schools nationwide. While we have seen other people betray our country, there will never be another Benedict Arnold. When you're the first to ever do it, you go down in infamy, just for all the wrong reasons. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and you're listening to the Chronicles of Time. Let's dive in to the treachery of Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold was born in 1741 in the British colony of Connecticut. His family was well off, and he would attend private school like the young gentleman he was trying to be. Yet it was during that time that he would suffer tremendous heartache. He would lose multiple siblings to yellow fever and his mother shortly after that. His father soon became an alcoholic who drank the family's fortune away. Benedict couldn't afford private school anymore, and the entire community harshly judged the Arnolds. Young Benedict wanted to attempt to make something of himself, so he began an apprenticeship learning apothecary. His father would eventually succumb to alcoholism when Arnold was only 20 years old. Completely alone, except for one sister, he joined the Connecticut militia and served in the French and Indian War, beginning a long military career. As a merchant, Arnold was heavily affected by the set of taxes imposed by Britain. By the time the Boston Tea Party happened, he was more than willing to fight for the Revolution. The Battle of Lexington and Concord was fought in April of 1775, kicking off the Revolutionary War. Just 1 month later, Arnold co-led with Ethan Allen the capture of Fort Ticonderoga. Yet he wasn't quite credited for the attack as he would have liked to have been. He then, as colonel, led an attack on Quebec, where he would sustain a leg injury. The attack was a failure and became the first major defeat for the Americans. Throughout it all, Benedict Arnold was beginning to make quite a name for himself in the Continental Army. Yet some found him to be abrasive and hard to work with. And although that was true, none of that mattered to the people who mattered most, like General George Washington. Washington even wrote of Arnold, "It is universally known that he has always distinguished himself as a judicious, brave officer of great activity, enterprise, and perseverance." In fact, Arnold soon became the first to command a naval fleet in America. One infamous person to serve under his leadership was future vice president and murderer of Alexander Hamilton, Aaron Burr. Perhaps Burr was lucky to have been under a leader such as Arnold. Arnold was the type of commander on the battlefield who would be in the heart of the battle, keeping his men encouraged. Despite his service, he was passed over by 5 junior officers for promotions. Although this was purely political, because Congress didn't want Washington to have too much power, it was nothing short of personal for Arnold. He would go on to write, "Having made every sacrifice of fortune and blood, and become a cripple in the service of my country, I little expected to meet the ungrateful returns I have received from my countrymen. Arnold even tried putting in his resignation from the army, but Washington refused to accept it. He was much too crucial. In October of 1777, Arnold, a general by now, led the Battle of Saratoga. Yet once again, he received no credit, just another leg injury. He was growing angry and aggravated by this point. He was close to boiling over. Or perhaps he had been done for a while. In 1779, he entered his second marriage with Peggy Shippen. Shippen was described by one officer to be the best-looking woman in America. Knowing what we know now about Arnold, a subtle sign of his heart not being 100% in the Revolution was by continuing to wear powdered wigs. This in no way makes someone a loyalist, but it is interesting. Americans would often cut their hair and not wear such pompous clothing, showing a sign of independence. Yet there was one more, bigger sign. His wife, Peggy, came from a known loyalist family. Was this the reason Arnold made his next decision? Or was it due to the army and Congress failing to appreciate him? I would say it was probably a mixture of both. George Washington soon gave Benedict Arnold command of West Point, but Arnold damn near had to beg for the position. There was a reason he wanted the job. West Point was an American fort that was around 50 miles from New York City. Washington described it once as the key to America. It was now under Arnold's control, and he was about to give it right to the British. The British had tried unsuccessfully during the war to get important American soldiers, generals, and commanders to turn to the red coat. So it was beyond astonishing when Benedict Arnold, one of America's greatest generals, decided to turn coats. The plan for Arnold was to give the British crucial information as well as preparing West Point to be captured by them. What exactly did Arnold get in return? Well, if the mission was successful, he would receive £20,000 and a position in the British Army. He also had convinced himself that once he surrendered the fort, he would command the British to a victory over America. It was only wishful thinking. Arnold had been in touch with an important British officer, John Andre, for the mission. Andre and Arnold met up during a midnight meeting where Arnold gave Andre notes on the mission, which were extremely sensitive. Andre goes on his way, yet finds trouble on his journey back. Dressed in regular clothing, not uniform, Andre was stopped by three militiamen in neutral territory. With their muskets drawn, he admits he is a British officer. The men were American patriots, so they tell Andre to give him his money. He claims that he has none, so the men make him prove it by emptying his pockets and his clothes. Eventually, they get to his stockings, and a note is revealed. Only one of the militiamen were literate, and he soon saw that Andre was a spy. The men then captured Andre, and he became a prisoner of war. Soon, two messengers were sent out. One was headed to George Washington with the papers that had been found on Andre. The other was going to Benedict Arnold with the word of Andre's capture. Here's the thing, though. Washington himself was on the way to West Point. Once the messenger gave notice to Arnold, he fled to the British. He knew he was no longer an American at that point. As for George Washington, he was confused when he got to West Point. The fort was open to attack, and Benedict Arnold was nowhere in sight. And once he read the papers from the messenger, Washington said, "Arnold has betrayed me. Whom can we trust now?" Lafayette would recall that he had never seen General Washington so affected by any circumstances. It was a complete blindside. This brave general that he had trusted completely betrayed him. He wrote, "I had no more suspicion of Arnold than I had of myself." As for Andre, because he was a prisoner of war, he was ordered to be executed. The British were rightfully upset. They had gained Benedict Arnold, a sellout who was willing to do anything for money, but they lost a noble and important general. Many even blamed Arnold for Andre's fate. Some even wanted their fates to be swapped, including Washington. He offered the British Andre in exchange for Arnold, but they refused. It would look weak. So Arnold was hung on October 2nd, 1780, within just 1 month of he and Arnold's meeting. Throughout the country, people began hanging fake Benedict Arnolds. He soon became the biggest villain in America. Arnold would leave the United States in 1781 and would never come back. Well, not like he was even welcome. He would serve for the British Army, and once the war was over, he had failed business after failed business. He would die in 1801 at the age of 60, still the most hated man in America. As the years progress, Benedict Arnold has begun to be re-examined, and some tend to think of his situation with a bit of sympathy. I won't lie, during my research, I found myself feeling bad for Arnold and how much he gave to this country for how little he got back for his service. Then I began feeling guilty for even feeling bad for him. It's just all so complex. You know what they say, every villain has an origin story. Author of The Notorious Benedict Arnold, Steve Shinkin, points out, if Arnold had died from his wounds in Saratoga, we would think of him today as one of the all-time great American heroes. And if you were to visit the Saratoga battlefield, there's a monument of a boot. It's not dedicated to anyone, but it's clearly for Benedict Arnold. It's in the exact spot where his leg was wounded in the battle. And sometimes it's hard to admit when two things can be true. But I'll be the first to say that Benedict Arnold was a tremendous United States general, but he was also the ultimate betrayer. At the end of the day, I definitely find him to be treacherous, yet I have a feeling that he would relish in the fact that he is still such a popular topic after all these years. No matter for the good or the bad, he was destined to be remembered. If you would like more Chronicles of Time content, follow my social media as well as my YouTube channel. Also check out my website at www.thechroniclesoftimepodcast.com. If you have any questions on the episode or episode suggestions, email me at thechroniclesoftimepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Treachery of Benedict Arnold. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and this has been The Chronicles of Time.